Support for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation and Stonyfield Farm.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. In 2004, for the very first time in its history, the Nobel Committee awarded its prestigious Peace Prize to an environmental activist. The winner was a scientist and an African woman. Her name, Wangari Maathai. Perhaps you've heard of the Greenbelt movement she founded to reforest the landscape of her East African nation. In today's program, we ask two questions. Who is Wangari Maathai, and why has her Greenbelt movement blossomed? Wangari Maathai says she had little idea in the beginning that teaching women to plant trees would not just demystify forestry, but would also change the lives of women and help clean up government as well. Living on Earth's Ingrid Lobet has our story of how this very Kenyan approach to environmental activism may hold lessons for the rest of the world.
A boundary of coffee, mango, and papaya trees encircles a steep hillside in Kenya's central highlands. The ground is packed with seedlings, their roots wrapped in black plastic. On any morning, in 3,500 nurseries like this one across central Kenya, volunteers tend their prospects. Hazel Wangui and a group of her neighbors shows me how they do it.
You take an empty bag. We fill with soil. We have mixed the soil with the manure. Yeah. So we fill and we do like that. After watering, we take seed. We make a hole with our finger. Then we insert. We insert the seed inside here, and then we water again.
Nurseries like this one are the core of the Greenbelt movement. They begin with a call or letter to the movement office in the capital, Nairobi. Greenbelt tells them, find a meeting room in your school or church and invite everyone. Then a staff member goes to the meeting and helps the community choose the most gung-ho or best organized among them to be leaders. People learn to collect tree seeds and how to choose a nursery plot. They prepare the ground. Then the movement gives them the precious black polyethylene tubes for tamping in the soil, the African version of the cardboard seedling pot.
Now, this is man-made.
Hazel and her friends lead me over to a hand-dug hole about 6 feet deep.
This is where we get water for watering. We use the can. This is the can we use.
To get water, you must step steeply down into the hole, brace your feet against its dirt sides, bend over and fill the bucket below your feet, then swing the 20 pounds of water over your head up onto the ground, and you must do this for 2 hours at a time, twice a day, until the seedlings are 6 inches high.
Ooh. This is what we do daily. This is what we do.
When the plants are 1 foot tall, they carry them to be planted.
And then we use sacks. We put about 20, and then we use our back.
They carry the 40 or so pound sacks of seedlings up the hillside, strapped to their foreheads.
You see, the place is steep, so we come more than 10 times. Yeah, going up and down, carrying this heavy knee. We carry 20 seedlings.
Yes, 20.
And it is heavy. They are heavy because the soil is wet. Yeah, that is what we do. Mm-hmm. Mm. We feel it is our work, so we can't get tired. We can see the fruit of the work we are doing. Yeah.
The young trees go to members' homes for future firewood or shade. They go to neighbors, nearby schools, and nowadays to rehabilitate Kenya's ragged forests. Wherever they go, the seedlings are free, but the person receiving them must dig all the holes, a show of commitment. Greenbelt members continue to tend the baby trees for 3 months. Then the office in Nairobi pays them an amount that's small but crucial, 5 shillings, about 7 cents a seedling. These acts of reforestation reverberate within Kenyans and their society. And the movement has confronted the government armed with seedlings and been viewed as subversive. Once was in 1996, when Greenbelt founder Wangari Maathai and her supporters staged a series of protests at Karura National Forest, a 2,600-acre wood on the northern outskirts of Nairobi. It turned out then-President Daniel Arap Moi was selling off pieces of forest to his backers.
The crowds approaching the gates of Karura only to be met by a huge police blockade.
Yeah, that day I saw this.
Lillian Muchungi is a Greenbelt organizer and mother of two. And as usual, she was with Wangari Maathai on this day to retake Karura symbolically by planting.
I was standing right next to her. And that is the day I thought, maybe one day we will die over Karura. But she said, and she said there, then, on my dead body, that Karura will ever be subdivided to individuals.
A crowd of young security guards hired to keep the protesters at bay waited a few yards away on the other side of a fence.
Now, when I looked at them, I knew these guys are going to beat us. They were carrying knives, they were carrying some daggers, you know, those very sharp pieces of wood, some whips and machetes, you know. Yeah. And I wanted to protect her. And I wanted to talk to her to ask her not to do it, and maybe we go back and maybe get back there another time. But she insisted, this is the day that I'm going to plant this tree. We must do it today.
A South African news team was on hand to record the standoff. Wangari Maathai held a seedling in one hand and a wooden crucifix in the other.
As you can see, I'm holding the power of Christ. I am quite sure that the Antichrist will not keep us away from the forest. This is the power that the man who died on this cross did not believe in, and I don't either.
And she was trying to dig a hole. That is when they all jumped over the fence. And some of them were on her with whips and some very sharp daggers. Ten young men, yes, were on us. I was hit with a big stone here, I remember. And for her, she was now, one of them landed on her head with one of the sharp objects. And when I saw blood, I started screaming. But others were on her now with the whips from all the sides. I still remember that day.
Maathai's head injury required stitching. She was released from the hospital a few days later. University students later joined the protests. The names of some involved in the real estate transactions were published, and the forest development halted. Where does a movement that can change a country begin? Maathai often recalls the heavily wooded hills of Nyeri, where she was born.
I grew up in a beautiful part of the countryside, full of trees, full of food, a lot of happiness, a lot of water, a lot of firewood, a lot of building material, everything that I am now trying to replenish. There was plenty of it when I was a child.
Wangari Maathai's mother also planted. She sent her daughter to school in the 1940s. In middle and high school, her teachers were nuns, and Maathai says she learned from their model of life in service to others. Then she traveled to Kansas to major in biology at a Catholic college, then more study in Pittsburgh and Germany, and back home.
In Nairobi, I pursued a PhD in anatomy in the early 1970s. It seemed as though besides being a wife and a mother, I was destined to be a university professor to help produce graduates of veterinary medicine who would feed the nation and East Africa with the products from the livestock industry.
It was an exciting time to be Kenyan. Independence from Britain was a decade past. A young scientist wanted to advance her people. Wangari Maathai focused on livestock. She studied the brown ear tick, collecting thousands of them in the countryside in the hope of alleviating rinderpest, a fatal East African cattle fever.
When I was collecting ticks, I saw environmental degradation in my country. I noticed the animals from which I collected the ticks were thin and clearly suffering from hunger. There was little grass and other fodder. Levers were low. This information was hitting me from all angles.
Mathai saw the signs in the countryside and heard discussions about hunger at the National Council of Women of Kenya.
I realized the real threat to cattle in my country was not the brown-eared tick, but the deteriorating environment around me. I also recognized that not only the livestock industry, but me, my children, my students, and my entire country were threatened by deteriorating environment. Deforestation, soil loss, pollution, and non-sustainable management of the land. At one seminar, I was struck that children from the central part of Kenya, where I grew up amongst plenty, were suffering from malnutrition.
Kenyan women were seeking faster cooking meals because firewood was getting harder to find. What the British colonists had begun, cutting timber to build the East African Railway, rural women were continuing in their search for fuel.
I listened to the women from the rural areas, and I noticed that the issues that they were raising had something to do with the land. They were asking for firewood. They need clean drinking water. They needed food, they needed income, because they were poor. I immediately understood that what we really needed to address those problems is to rehabilitate the environment. I started encouraging women that we plant trees. That's how it all started.
Though it wasn't clear at the time, Wangari Maathai and the National Council of Women of Kenya were inventing a playbook, an operating manual, not just for planting trees, but for transforming the lives of Kenyan women. But to do so, they had to enter the province of Men, the nation's professional foresters. They weren't always eager to share their knowledge. Maathai sought then, as she would many times, to disarm the opposition, telling them, "We're just a bunch of women planting trees."
Coming up, we'll hear how the Greenbelt Movement and its founder, Wangari Maathai, reforested whole regions of Kenya and in the process drew the wrath of the Kenyan government. Keep listening to Living on Earth.